Hey everyone, I know you've heard me speak about microdosing and how much I love it. And I'm talking about microdosing THC. I love it. And that's why I love our sponsor, microdose.com. Microdose gummies are incredible. They deliver perfect entry-level doses of THC that help you feel just the right amount of good. And when I mean just the right amount of good, I mean in so many situations. Anxiety, sleep, focus, pain, relaxation. There are so many different strains and they're really helpful. And I have recommended microdose.com to so many people. And you know what they say to me? Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. Don't be afraid of microdosing. Go to microdose.com and you'll learn all about microdosing THC. These gummies feel amazing. They taste amazing. I have used them to get me into the zone I need to write. I've used them at night after a stressful day or a stressful show to relax. I have also said to family members, please take a gummy right now. And they've said, oh, good idea. So check it out. Check it out because they're fantastic. And I'm not like a big weed person. I mean, I used to be. And I do enjoy weed every now and then. But I love these gummies. And I take them with me everywhere. So check it out. Don't be afraid. They're all natural. They're fantastic. And you deserve it. So what are you going to do? You're going to do something that is fantastic. You're going to get 30% off your first order. 30% off. That's a lot. Plus free shipping today at microdose.com. Use promo code JUDYGOLD, JUDYGOLD. It's available nationwide. They deliver it to your door. That is microdose.com. Promo code JUDYGOLD for 30% off and free shipping. Do it. Go to microdose.com. Promo code JUDYGOLD. You deserve it. You deserve it. And you know what else? You're welcome.
Tropfen's been raining off my cup. And pink via deckables to see Kalein and Farbein to up. Gate mir kein's a flint. Die Tropfen.
Hey everyone, welcome to Kill Me Now with Judy Gold. I'm your host, Judy Gold, and this week I have part one of my interview with Tova Friedman. This is the most important podcast I've done this year, and I want to do more like this. She is the co-author of The Daughter of Auschwitz, My Story of Resilience, Survival, and Hope, which is her story of surviving Auschwitz. She is a therapist. She is a social worker. She is just an incredible human being who is speaking out now, as you'll hear, because of what's going on and how much this reminds her of what it was like in Europe in the 30s. It's a fascinating story, and she's just an incredibly accomplished, warm, and wonderful human being. And so I hope you enjoy that. I could not mark it on when I posted about the podcast this week. I couldn't say Kill Me Now. I just couldn't say it. But she's incredible. So that's what's coming up. Just a few things before we get to the interview. I just wanted to say this Wednesday, the 20th, I'll be in Phoenix at Rick Bronson's House of Comedy, and there's a 7 p.m. show, or 8 p.m., I don't know, I think it's 7 p.m., who the hell knows. It's with me and Aaron Berg and Rich Voss. It was called Stand Up for Israel, but we had to change the name to Badass Jews after the staff started an online sort of boycott, doing such things as, calling for protesters and giving the emails of the club owners and saying that they were funding genocide to the point where, you know, I called up just making believe I wanted to buy tickets to the show. And the person on the phone, I said, I wanted, you know, the show March 20th. I'd like to get tickets for that show. And she said, oh, yeah, that's an interesting show, to say the least. You can get tickets on the website. You can't get them on the phone. And I called because someone my brother knows called to buy tickets, which you can buy on the phone, actually, and or reserve on the phone, or yeah, I'm sure pay for them on the phone as well. And the person who answered the phone said the show was sold out. So they are trying to derail the show. And a lot of these people are open micers. They're staff members. It's really sad. It's really, really, it's pathetic is what it is. So the name of the show is now Badass Jews. And that's what we are. And we're proud of it. So I'll have more on this next week, but and I'm sure there'll be protesters. It's really disgusting behavior on so many levels. And, you know, after writing a book about free speech, it's just disgusting. And this willful ignorance is making history repeat itself. And you'll hear more about that in a couple of minutes. Also wanted to say, I am so proud of Ben and his team, the Trinity Bantams. They went to the Final Four in Fort Wayne on Thursday. They lost to Trine University. Trine University is a college right by Fort Wayne. So the entire stadium was full of Trine fans. They had a band. They had cheerleaders. Anytime a Trinity fan was on the Jumbotron, they started booing. It was really pathetically pathetic. And, you know, it was definitely a home court advantage. So they ended their run, but I'm so proud of them. They did so well. Ben made All-American. He made All-Academic. He made first team in his region. They won the NESCAP championship. I mean, I don't know why I'm ringing the bell for all that, but, you know, it's, I never took off this much time. It was worth it. It was worth it because I'll never have that experience again. So it was a wonderful run. The parents are amazing. It was great. And to watch your child thrive and work so hard for something and get so far it's nachas. I mean, it's wonderful. So that's it. And also this weekend, March 22nd and 23rd, I am going right outside of Chicago to Rosemont, Illinois, to Zany's. Zany's in Rosemont, Illinois, this Friday, two shows, Saturday, two shows, 7:30 and 9:30. It's a great club. If you're in the Chicago area, please come. Please support me. I love you. Also, April 5th and 6th, I'm in Bloomington, Indiana, back to Indiana, at the Comedy Attic, which is a fantastic club. So I'm back on the road. Yeah, that's all I have to tell you. If you live in New York, I'm doing an hour of stand-up comedy at the Comedy Cellar at the Fat Black Pussycat on March 31st, Easter Sunday. And I'm excited for that. And yeah, I have other stuff going on. But this today is very, very, very important. And I thank you for listening. It's crucial. It's crucial that we hear Tova's story, and she is such a wonderful woman. So sit back, relax, and enjoy. Kill Me Now. Tova, I am honored. I am humbled. I cannot thank you enough.
Judy, you're a movie star. I looked you up.
No, I'm not a movie star. Okay.
All right. Bye, yeah, son. I looked you up. I saw the movies, and that's
Please, nothing. Nothing. Cool. Tova, you are cool. I cannot thank you enough. This is probably, I interviewed one other Holocaust survivor. This will be the second. These two are the most important podcasts I have ever done, especially today. And Tova, yeah. I cannot thank you enough. I mean, you have so many accomplishments. I'm telling you, we could interview you about your life. You got a bachelor's in psychology from Brooklyn College, master's of arts in black literature from City College of New York, a master's in social work from Rutgers, where my alma mater. You have done so much in your life. You're a mother, you're a grandmother, but your story of surviving Auschwitz has always been important, but it is more important now.
I agree. And that's what's so interesting. Yeah.
You have said, first of all, can we just start? You were born in Poland in 1938, mother, father. You moved by a port. Is that correct? That you lived near a port before you went off to, like a pier or a, your family had moved to this town. After your parents moved to a different town after they got married?
You mean Danzig?
Yes.
Yeah. Well, Danzig is not a town. Danzig is a gigantic city.
City, yeah.
It had its own government. It was a free city, very, very famous. Still is, by the way.
Yes. And it was on the water, is that right or no?
Yes.
Okay. Your entire childhood. You said that you knew nothing about, the only thing you knew about being Jewish was that you died for
it. No, I did not say that. I said is that we didn't follow any Judaism in the camps. And I didn't understand why Jews have to be killed. I didn't know what it was.
That was
the reason, but I very, very well knew that I was Jewish.
Right.
And you said around me.
I'm so sorry I misspoke. Knew that you were Jewish.
I didn't understand the essence and why we were being killed.
Right.
I still don't.
same. Your story, first of all, your relationship with your mother, your mother's to me, it sounds like such an incredible woman. The fact that she hid nothing from you.
Right. Exactly.
Yeah.
She had a philosophy of parenting. I was her first and only child. And she thought in her head, maybe because she was lonely and didn't have that many friends, that I should know what's going on. And if I know what's going on all around me, I'll be able to protect myself. Because she knew that eventually we would be separated.
Right, so, and that information was power.
Exactly. Still is. Yes, information is power. So she verified everything I saw, and she answered every question very, very truthfully.
Right. You know, it's so interesting because so many parents would want to hide that.
Right.
And yet she wanted you to know everything and be armed with the truth.
Yeah, she wanted to know that I should understand how dangerous my environment was so that I could take care of myself.
Right. Now, you were born in 1938. I heard you say your first birthday, you were celebrating your first birthday and you weren't at home. Your uncle was at home. And that is when
I was a year old.
Right.
What happened was my grandparents haven't seen me because we lived hours away. It's about 3 hours drive now. So you can imagine how far this was. So they wanted to go back. They really had two reasons. One, to have me meet, I was only a year old, they should meet me. And also because life in our city became very bad. You know, the Kristallnacht was there when I was only 3 months old. So the signs were everywhere. The Jews have to somehow get out and try to save themselves. But mistakenly, my father thought it'll be safer at home with his family. Or maybe most people feel like this. Right. You know, in danger, you go home. Right. You want to go home. And that's what he did. To go home and to introduce me, and I should meet the family at that young age.
I mean, your first memories, I don't know. Were in the war. You're born during this awful time.
Exactly. One year before the war. Yeah. My first memories were ghetto memories. I don't remember much before the ghetto because I was 2 years old where we had to move. And I remember living in this very, very crowded apartment. I don't remember any other children. Maybe one or two came to visit, but I didn't remember any children living with us. My grandmother, my mother's mother, was there for a short time, and people came and went, and it was very crowded, and I lived under the table. I do remember that very well. And it didn't seem it didn't seem unusual to me.
You didn't know anything else. Yeah.
I knew nothing else. So I said, I felt safe. It was warm. I had blankets. I had some toys. I was fed. Do you know? Right. So it wasn't a punishment, or it was just, that's the way it is.
This is the way it is. Yeah. Because you're so young, you know nothing else. And then you live like this for quite a long time. And you then get sent, but they didn't take you first, right? They took other family members. Your father's said something about
my father's parents.
You saw your father cry twice, you said.
My father came. The way I knew what was going on is to listen. And I listened when I was very, very young. I still do, by the way. I listen the whole day because I'm a therapist. So it's the same process. And I heard what was going on. And my mother encouraged it. She did not tell me, So I witnessed the death of my grandmother. I didn't witness it. I saw that her being taken away, and I knew she was shot because they were taking all elderly. But I knew that. Maybe they didn't tell it to me in words, but I knew that. And I knew that it was dangerous to be a child and you may be killed. So being under the table, it was sort of safe. And then I remember coming out. I could come out anytime I wanted. You know, it wasn't like a rule that I had to be there. But there was nothing else to do. So I was more comfortable there. And one time when my father came home, he told my mother about his parents. And I knew exactly what he meant because I stood near the table where they were sitting and they were talking. And then I saw my father's tears coming down and I knew that that's it, that he took his parents. And when my Uncle James, who used to come all the time, when he didn't show up anymore and my father said, "You will never see him again," I knew it intuitively. You know how children know things without pre-verbal, although at the time I was 4 years old already, I was verbal.
Right.
But I knew that he was dead, whatever dead was, and I wasn't going to see him anymore. So I knew everything what was going on.
Hey, everybody, if you know me, you know I love my liquid IV, and I love giving it to people and telling people about it, and it's part of my everyday life. I keep hydrated with liquid IV. I put it in my water bottle. Well, I have this one water bottle that I use only for liquid IV, and I put lots of ice in it and cold water because I like it very cold. And It keeps me hydrated and it's delicious. So thank you, Liquid IV. And I have to tell you, I've now given it to my son's girlfriend because, you know, they go out partying. You know what I'm talking about. And it has helped her immensely with her dehydration, that it's great for those nights where you know you're going to be having a few drinks. It's delicious. It comes in pear, white peach, grape, lemon lime. Also, there's a lemon ginger one that is great that has a little caffeine. I just love Liquid IV. And you need to keep hydrated. It's very important. It affects you on so many levels. So do yourself a favor. Keep hydrated in the best way possible. Some people hydrate to live. Some people live to hydrate. I think I live to hydrate. Liquid IV quenches your thirst faster than water alone. It has 3 times the electrolytes of leading sports drinks, 8 vitamins and nutrients for everyday wellness. And this is true. They have a sugar-free stick. They have Liquid IV sugar-free that Elisa, my lover, loves. I don't use the sugar-free. Whatever. But it's also been great for my traveling because I get very dehydrated on my airplane flights. So please, you've heard me say this multiple times. Go get your Liquid IV. You have to keep hydrated. It's very important. So however you hydrate, grab your Liquid IV hydration multiplier, sugar-free in bulk, nationwide at Costco, or get 20% off your first order when you go to liquidiv.com and use code JUDYGOLD at checkout. That's 20% off your first order when you shop Better Hydration today using promo code JUDYGOLD, J-U-D-Y-G-O-L-D, at liquidiv.com. You're welcome. You said that your mother was taught you a lot of rules. The first rule was no.
When I had to be alone. At this place, I didn't have any rules. She was with me. I was still parented by my mother, and not so much my father because he wasn't around much, but my mother. And I knew when she was making food. Once in a while, she would take me out to the ghetto, and I'd see people starving and children crying. And my mother told me they had no parents because their parents died. Not often. She didn't take me with her often because her job was to get food, and it was very hard to get food because you had to go online and stand for hours. So I wasn't very often with her. I was left in the apartment, but I knew what was going on.
When you were outside and you saw, I mean, do you remember the signs, the fact that, you know, that no Juden and no, you know, were you surrounded?
Read. I couldn't read. I didn't know the signs. You know, I started more later on, you know, but at that time, I couldn't read till I was an adult almost.
Right, because you had no school. You didn't get to go to school. But do you remember being, oh, that's a Jew, that's not a Jew, because they're starving.
Everybody in the ghetto that I saw were Jews. But I saw crying children. Right. I saw hunger. I
just
saw
surrounded
kids
lying, by sadness.
You know,
yeah.
You saw corpses. The atmosphere, it was this ghetto, by the way, it was everywhere. The ghetto was the first place where they started getting rid of us.
Right.
Through different means, through illnesses, there was cholera.
Right.
Everywhere. There was typhus, epidemic of typhus, and of course, hunger.
Right. Hunger, you mentioned so much.
The biggest killer.
You then get sent off to Auschwitz.
No, you see, they had a system. Then they took us to a camp called Starchowice, where there was only work. And that's where I learned rules because I was alone the whole day. She told me rules in Auschwitz also, by the way.
Right.
That's because I had to function when she wasn't around. But in Starchowice, She would go, she and my father would go to work in a factory every single day. And the kids were just roaming the streets. There weren't many of us left, by the way, because by then many of the kids were killed, sent to concentration camps, shot, starved, or they were ill from diseases. So she taught me about behavior when I'm alone and when I see a guard, a German soldier, or whatever his, you know, his position was. I couldn't tell the difference between an SS and a regular soldier. Now I know the different markings, but at that time I didn't know. I only knew that they were very dangerous and they had dogs with them. And that the dogs were trained to kill if you run. She taught me not ever to run. When I, it was counterintuitive. When you see, when you are 4.5 years old and you're scared of somebody, you run. That's what you do.
Right, of course. It's your instinct.
That's the opposite. Yeah. You have to stand very, very still.
Right.
And if you're still, then they will let that everything will be okay.
Right.
The dogs won't hurt you. And the SS with his gun won't hurt you because you're not running. Right. You're not in any danger of anything. So she taught me that. And she taught me no eye contact.
Right.
She always said to me, you know, eyes are so, you recognize each other through your eyes. And by the way, during COVID, that was correct?
Right. Exactly. You know what? Yes, exactly. You know, sometimes during COVID, when people... I would see their eyes and then I would ask them, can you take your mask off? And I would be so surprised that I had imagined a completely different face, you know?
Right.
You then, okay, so after this work camp, you go to Auschwitz.
Yeah, after which all the kids, many kids were killed, very few of us left. They put us on this cattle car and that was the final solution. The last.
Right. I want to talk about your time in Auschwitz, but I think it's so important that we talk about the fact that Auschwitz was the final solution, but that Mein Kampf was written so many years before that people knew who Hitler was and didn't stop them.
It's an enigma. I once asked my father after, you know, I said to him, I said to him, you've been through Kristallnacht. He was a reader. He was very smart. You knew what was going on in Germany. You knew all. What were you doing with your time? He said, you know, I was just married. I had a young family. You were about a year old. I had a business. I said to myself, somebody will kill that crazy. Somebody will assassinate him. And I went about my business. People did not think it's... Do you know what's interesting? I want to tell you that what's interesting. Many men ran away and they ran to Russia. Many men. It's not that they abandoned the families. It's that they thought Hitler's going to kill the men. So they ran away. It didn't imagine that he would kill women and children. It wasn't in their thought process. So nobody could imagine what happened. Human imaginations could not foresee anything like that.
And it's being repeated once again. That's why you are such an important voice. You've said that you don't have survivor guilt. You have survivor's responsibility.
Right. I do. I have a responsibility to remember those that were killed. 1.5 million children weren't as lucky as I was. It's pure luck that I'm here. So it's my responsibility. I don't want to forget them.
And, of course.
And the 6 million Jews. And the other one is it's a sort of a warning. Look what anti-Semitism did. Look what happens. I mean, it's being repeated in a way that the world is again anti-Semitic. And they get very angry. The world is angry that this time we're defending ourselves. Last time we didn't.
Right.
Do you know?
That is so, such an important point. Yeah.
Exactly.
They're so angry that we are sticking up for ourselves.
Exactly. And that- you know, for years, I used to hear, why did you go? I don't mean me, but why right. did all of you go to the gas chambers like sheep? Like cattle. And I said, well, we did not have a fight. We had no weapons. We were taken from our homes, from our beds. We weren't prepared.
Which happened which just happened yet again. Yeah.
Right? I mean, so we were shocked that this was happening to us. And nobody helped us. The world was silent. And Hitler tried to keep it a secret.
Right.
Well, now we were also killed when we were dancing, but we were prepared.
Right.
So in a sense, I don't know why the world is so upset that we are fighting back and to protect our people and our country. You know, it's interesting.
So many people say, we shouldn't be here. Still here and people resent it. But, right. you know, Tova, I also feel like we contribute so much to the world.
Do you know how many Nobel Prize we have?
Yes, yes.
What we did in medicine.
Please.
Everything. So many things. People are alive. They blamed us when we didn't fight back. And now they're blaming us when we're fighting back.
It's mind-boggling,
you know?
Right? And yet they're happy to use whatever contributions we've made to the world.
There is so much. If I knew, I would have been prepared to tell you. I have it on my internet, but
I talk about it all the time.
You know, fabulous. Don't yeah, right.
It's so important.
Hey everyone, I love our sponsor, Fast Growing Trees. I don't know if you've noticed. When we show the clips of the podcast, that I have a new best friend in my office named Avi. And where did I get Avi? At Fast Growing Trees. Fast Growing Trees is the biggest online nursery in the United States with more than 10,000 different kinds of plants and over 2 million happy customers in the United States of America. And I am a happy customer. I love walking in this room and seeing my fig tree, Avi. I talk to Avi. I love it. It makes me happy. And you need plant life in your house. And I have another plant on my piano in the other room. I'm just telling you, it makes your home so much more of a home. So thank you to Fast Growing Trees. They have everything you could possibly want. They have fruit trees. They have palm trees. They have evergreens. They have houseplants and so much more. And I'm in an apartment in New York. Okay, I don't even have a yard outside. And it's changed my life. Do it. Go to Fast Growing Trees. And whatever you're interested in, they have it. They have the perfect fit for your climate, for your space. You can call them and ask them how to take care of your plants. They have so much information. And it's so easy to order online. Your plants are shipped directly to your door in 1 to 2 days. They have a 30-day alive and thrive guarantee. They have free plant consultation forever. And I have a new best friend, Avi. I love you, Avi. So do it. You don't need a yard. You don't need a lot of space. You just need to make your home a beautiful place. And that's where Fast Growing Trees comes in. This spring, Fast Growing Trees has the best deals online, up to half off on select plants and other deals. And listeners to our show get an additional 15% off their first purchase when using the code JUDYGOLD at checkout. JUDYGOLD at checkout. That's an additional 15% off at fastgrowingtrees.com using the code JUDYGOLD at checkout. Fastgrowingtrees.com, code JUDYGOLD. Offer is valid for a limited time. Terms and conditions may apply. Do it. You're welcome.
So you get to Auschwitz, you're 5, right? Are you 5?
5 and a half. Yeah.
Your father is elsewhere, right? Or does he go to Auschwitz with you?
He comes with us to Auschwitz. He gets tattooed And it's right, sent, again sent to Dachau.
Dachau. And you, can you tell the story of getting tattooed that you, the, you remember the woman?
Very, very. You know, the tattoo, it was a process because I don't know why I was so interested in it. I found it fascinating in some way that this woman would take a pen or something that looked like a pen, dip it in an inkwell or something, and then put it into my body. And there was a little dot. It's all made of tiny little dots, and I followed them. So it could, the pain came afterwards, not right. in the very beginning, you know? And she was talking to me, and she said to me, you know, I'm going to give you a very neat number. Now, she took the number from a clipboard. She had this clipboard, and each, there were about 50, 60 children tattooed at that time. And we were all standing in line. So she, each child had a name next to it and the number. It was very organized. But she said, it's going to be very, very neat. And when you grow up, if you survive, that was the first sort of my survival.
Right.
You'll get yourself a long shirt and you can be covered up. It will be, and I have a very neat number, by the way.
Wow. So, you said she was shaking.
Yeah, her hand was shaking.
Yeah, yeah.
And I said to myself, again, intuitive. Kids right, are very right. intuitive. I said, this lady doesn't want to do this.
Right.
She doesn't want to do this. And then she gave me a rag. She said, put it in water and then press it very hard. Don't rub. Press it so it won't swell. Then I know, I didn't know what to do. But right. her instructions were very helpful. And I always talk about her because when the job was done, she was killed. She wasn't more than wow. 18, 19 years old.
Wow.
You know, the idea that you had to be useful. If you were useful, you could live a little longer. And if you weren't, then you immediately had the gas chambers waiting for you.
Ugh. You ended up going to the gas chamber.
Yeah.
You yeah. talked about...
That's after the tattoos. After the right. tattoos. Yeah. One day they told us that we're having a great lunch, a breakfast.
Right.
It was so unbelievable. It was delicious, something warm. It was like a porridge. And I knew, again... I'm pretty sure the other kids know too that this is the breakfast, the meal before gas chamber, because
right.
the barrack next to us was empty, and they had gone to the gas chamber a week earlier.
But and you were know that, what? That children? Was that
they were full of children? Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Full of children, and it's interesting. That nobody cared because food was such a gift that I said to myself, I really don't care, you know. Gas chamber, no gas chamber, I'm going to eat.
Right. That's and all you could think about.
That's all we wanted. I tried to describe to my grandkids what real hunger is. There's no way. Somebody, it's not my quote, but somebody said to someone else, tell me, did you ever think of God in Auschwitz? And the person answered, yes, it was a piece of bread.
Wow.
There's no description. There just isn't any. Hunger right. is something that you really have to experience, and I hope people don't.
Right. Oh, that's awful.
We went to the gas chamber. We walked. And I
but
thought-
But before, did I read that you- heard your mother's voice.
Yes, I heard a voice, and she called me by my name. And I said, gee, who knows my name? Because the person who tattooed me said, forget your name. This is your name, 27,633, which I memorized because I didn't understand what, I couldn't read, and I couldn't correspond the words to the numbers,
right.
but I knew the whole expression, you know, like a mantra. I knew what right. it was. And then when I heard my name, I said, must be my mother, but I couldn't see her. I saw her with a lot of women, but but I couldn't distinguish which one. Everybody had, you know, their heads were shaven. They all wore the same kind of a rags. You couldn't find a person there.
Right.
But I heard her voice, and she said, "Where are you going?" I said, "To the gas chamber or crematorium." I can't remember which one I said. I thought I said crematorium, not gas chamber. And she started screaming, she and the other women, because the children, some of them had children in the group that I was with. And I said, I turned to the girl next to me. I was in the back. I was pretty small. And I said, "Why are they crying? Every Jewish child has to go to the crematorium." It's something I heard since I could remember. So we
it got was expected. There. Yeah.
Yeah. I'm not sure I knew what it was, but I knew that you don't come back. Wow. You know, did I understand death? I don't think so. Do I understand the death now? No.
Right.
I'm 85 years old. I can't picture myself dead. You can't really picture that so well.
Right.
So we went down the steps. We got, and they told us to undress. It was so cold. It's another thing that's hard to describe. The Polish cold winters when you're naked. Being naked was every so often, everybody had to take off their clothes. It's like they stripped you of humanity. And nakedness was just, you know, animals have no clothes, so we don't deserve any. Right. We sat there, we waited. And they also told us to take our clothes and put it on the hooks. There were hooks all around, and memorize the number. So when we come out from the shower, we'll find our clothes. But since I couldn't read, I looked at the person next to me to see what her clothes look like, so I could find it again, because I couldn't find, I wouldn't find the numbers. And we waited and waited and waited, and they sent us back. I don't know why. To this day. And the guy
that's unbelievable. Book, yeah.
You know, Malcolm is a reporter. He did a lot of research. He couldn't find it. There were three or four different possibilities. It was
about
the end
why,
of the war.
Right.
It was, you know, and there was the Russians were coming, and they were afraid to be seen, having so many corpses. They had enough corpses. You know, they tried to, we don't know. So we came out, and just a miracle. My whole barrack was in.
Wow. Thank you so much for listening to part one of my interview with Tova Friedman. Part two is next week. I hope you enjoyed it as much as you could. You know, get her book, The Daughter of Auschwitz, My Story of Resilience, Survival, and Hope. Read these stories. This is so important that we remain cognizant of what is happening right now and the rise in anti-Semitism. So thank you for listening to that. Just a reminder, Wednesday the 20th, I will be in Phoenix at the House of Comedy, 22nd and 23rd of March. This Friday and Saturday, Zanies in Rosemont, Illinois. Two shows Friday, two shows Saturday. What else? I have... the 31st, I will be at the Fat Black Pussycat Lounge at 5 o'clock on Easter Sunday doing an hour. And I'm at the Comedy Attic in Bloomington, Indiana, April 5th and 6th. So, yeah. That's it. I hope you enjoyed part one of, you know, this interview today, and please tune in next week for part two. Yeah, that's, I don't know what else to say. I just don't know. This world is, it's crazy. But you're the best. I love you for listening. Thank you for listening to the end. If you are, we will be rebranding the podcast. It'll still be me doing the same crazy stuff, but we'll have a new name and a new theme song, and it's going to be so exciting. So anyway, thank you all for listening. I love you all. And as we always say, so long.